eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
And welcome back to Eat, Drink, Talk, Louisville's top restaurant and bar podcast, where we dive deep into the local dining and drinking scene. I'm your host, Steve Coombs, back in town from Indianapolis. I am, and joined by, also back in town from Denver, far more sexy, my co-host Rick Redding.
Welcome back. I don't know how sexy it was, but it was. I had a lot of fun out in the West and
in the Mile High City.
In the Mile
Did you find
High
yourself gasping for air?
I didn't. You know, some of the people I was with said, "Oh man, it takes me a while to get adjusted to the air." But you know, I don't know. I'm very fortunate. I don't get allergies. I don't have any like other ailments that everybody else gets. So
you oxygenate well.
I guess
sounds
so.
Like.
Yeah. So I was cruising along the streets of Denver with no problem.
And that's important for this job, where you got to eat and drink a lot, and that can wear you out and leave you breathless sometimes, maybe.
It certainly could, and I'm anxious to tell you about at least one of the places I went to up there that for eating and drinking. But first, let's talk about our sponsors.
Yes, could it affect your sight?
It could.
That's the thing.
Well, your one-stop shop for eye care is the Eye Care Institute, right down here in Butchertown. Whether you have routine vision issues or need significant correction, such as LASIK, or if you suffer with cataracts, glaucoma, macular degeneration, or diabetes, the Eye Care Institute is where you want to visit. They're located at 1536 Story Avenue. Call and make an appointment at 502-589-1500.
And after you get your new glasses or your LASIK, definitely go down to Harvest for a three-course Thursday meal, which means you get a three-course $30 meal from Chef Patrick Roney's Kitchen Crew. Hard to find a better deal in the town that day. It's every Thursday, by the way. Make reservations at $3,499 or online at harvestlouisville.com. 624 East Market in Louisville.
Excellent deal. Well, Steve, I got to congratulate you. You did a great job doing the show while I was gone. Very interesting St. Patrick's Day stuff.
It. Yeah, yeah. We two great guests, two Irishmen. I always butcher it. Sorry, Finn Bard, doing it again, buddy. But yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
So, all right. So we've been on the road. It was a lot of fun getting out of town and seeing things. I went up to my favorite is going to be from. There's a Louisville connection here. I'll tell you, Hunter S. Thompson, you know, is famous for being from the Aspen or living a lot of time in the
was
Aspen
that right?
area. And I went to the place called the Woody Creek Tavern.
Is that a place where he's from?
That's a place where he hung out. And it's funny when you're going around Denver and Aspen and you're talking to people, a lot of them say, yeah, I met him. I did this with him or that with him. So he was really a cult figure in that area, so
as was Kurt Vonnegut in Indy, where I was this past weekend.
They have a list of
11 Vonnegut inspired cocktails that are named after his books.
Oh, cool.
And kind of an urban bourbon trail thing, where you go to different bars and you check off your Vonnegut list and have cocktails. So
do you have a Hocus Pocus?
I that was the first Vonnegut book I bought. Cough cough, right?
Yeah.
I'm a fan. Not a huge Vonnegut fan, but I do like him. But it was cool, you know, just hanging around, seeing a nearby city, seeing their restaurant scene, which, if you can believe it, is a bit behind ours, but still,
wow,
it's really on the rise, especially the beer scene up there. It's incredible.
Yeah, a lot of that. Had a meal at a brewery, what looked like a new brewery in Denver, and I guess they're up on that thing as well. So it's a great city.
Leading the country.
Well, back here at home, you've got a story just today about a new Bourbon and Beyond Festival coming up in September.
That's right. It's going to be created by Danny Wimmer, the guy who is behind the Louder Than Life rock concert. And he had the guts to stand up and say, all right, Mayor, we've seen you guys talk about it for a couple of years. Nobody's getting it done, so I'm going to do it. And he is, you know, setting out to do a festival that elevates Kentucky food and whiskey, and he's going to back it with with music. Now, what shape that takes, I don't know. I hope it's a whole lot classier than Louder Than Life. Not to besmirch anybody that goes to those things.
It won't be louder, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, yeah. It just seems to be oh, how do I say, it's going to be an odd fit, to say the least. But if Wimmer can pull it off, that's great. I have no doubt that the restaurant community here is kind of wrinkling its nose over it because they didn't understand what's going to happen because nobody's shared any details. Right. But I know
it's new.
It was getting nowhere. The Mayor's Bourbon Festival Committee or whatever they were called was getting absolutely nowhere and probably hasn't met in a year.
Yeah.
To get anything done. Nobody could decide how to do a Charleston food and wine type festival here. And it seemed the city said, we want no financial risk, we want no effort, but we probably want to step up and take some credit for it.
Well, what's the, is it multiple sites or is it come to one spot?
No clue.
Spot?
I have no clue.
Huh.
Nobody has said a thing. And you know, they say details to come, so we shall see.
I guess. Yeah. Well, it's rumored to be going to happen, so that's enough for me.
Yeah, they got dates tacked onto it, September 22nd and 23rd.
Yeah, I just...
Or 23rd, 24th. It's a Saturday and Sunday. Yeah,
I'll be very anxious to see how they do the locations and all that. So
absolutely.
That's a good thing to look forward to.
So we also learned that Jeffrey Daly, the longtime chef at Corbett's, is now at Harvest. When I had dinner there last week, and we'll talk about that in the favorites section of the show. Patrick Roney, the chef, had said, you know, he had hired him. Daly had been at Corbett's about 10 years from the time he was an intern at Sullivan to the time he had become Chef de Cuisine a couple of years ago, and apparently did not like the shift that owner Dean Corbett made to Jack's, you know, the more casual food, and I can understand that. So he went off to a restaurant that still does that high-end fine dining stuff, and according to Dean, that makes more talent, more chef talent than at any restaurant in this city. And he said that will be the city's finest food, which I thought was a pretty cool professional thing to say.
That is quite a huge compliment. So how's Dean doing over there with he's got some positions to fill, I guess.
Well, since they made the shift from away from fine dining to the Jack's lounge type business, they are up 30% in sales.
Wow.
So apparently he's hit on the right he guessed right in making that change. He said they did. I was talking to him the other day. They did 226 for dinner Saturday night. I said, when's the last time that happened? He said, Derby. So, you know, the city wants casual. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to it's hard to just get fired up for going out and having a real formal meal these days.
And parting with a lot of money.
Yeah.
To do it. You know, even if I had the money, I don't know that my gut could take all that.
Yeah,
kind of food.
Exactly. But there's been a lot of chefs moving around town.
Yeah.
Steve, and you're right on top of all that.
Alan Rosenberg last week announced that he is going to have open the Butchertown Pizza Hall sometime this year. That was formerly where Hall's Cafeteria was. And that that marks a return to pizza for him. He had Papalino's a couple of years ago until he went to Fauntleroy's and then to Citizen 7 and then to Anoush Bistro and Anoush Nosh or Noosh Nosh. And,
man, hard to keep up with all of it.
Peripatetic.
But I was really shocked because he's been on the show, Josh Bettis, down at the Brown Hotel leaving.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that I hadn't heard about that. It happened in November, so maybe the hotel wanted it hush-hush. He's a great chef. Apparently left on good terms, went to just a sister concept out in Colorado.
Wow.
So he's one of those guys, I think, that loves to travel and see the world, and he and his wife, Summer, don't have any kids, so they're not anchored to schools or anything, so they can move about and do it. So what is it? I'm trying to think of the gentleman who replaced him. James Adams. James Adams. That's right. So he's been there, and hopefully we're going to meet him this week and maybe do a podcast with him.
All right. Very good. And you got one more. I guess let's interject, though. You know, you mentioned the Butchertown Pizza Hall. Announcement came just yesterday about the guy who owns the Holy Moly food truck is opening a sit-down pizza and pasta restaurant in Butchertown.
Right.
What's going on in Butchertown, man? There's just a lot of stuff.
Well, I mean, we're old enough and it's been recent enough for us to watch the boom in Nulu. So maybe it's happening in Butchertown now on a much smaller scale. It'd be great to see. I'm sorry, people, but there's not enough good pizza in this town for me. So if that bothers you that a new pizzeria is opening up, I don't know. At least you won't be in line in front of me, I guess.
That's right. There's nothing better than... You know, you can't have too much. Too much is not enough.
Especially when it's a mile and a half from my house. I'm liking that a whole lot. So good on you for that, or for remembering that. Before we move on to our first guest, or let's talk about our first guest.
Okay. Yeah, I just since you have on our makeshift script here, the thing about Jeff Ruby, I just think that we ought to mention, in my view, one of the smartest marketing moves of all time, at no cost, because the guy got featured on the CBS broadcast of all the games because he promised a steak dinner to every Northern Kentucky student if Northern Kentucky beat UK, which is like betting against the sun coming up. it's like it's not going to happen. It's not going to cost you a dime, and you get featured on this big broadcast. I think Ruby's marketing the Spurs are really, really good there.
Well, and then he came back and he said he's going to start giving steak dinners in all the cities where his restaurants are to students who graduate in those towns where those, you know, where universities are in those markets. I think that's really cool.
Maybe somebody saw through how cheesy the promise was that he wouldn't have to pay for.
I still think it's pretty dang funny. Somebody else who's brilliant at marketing is our first guest, and that is J.K. McKnight, who's founder of Forecastle. And he's going to talk about not so much the music concert that's coming up, this wonderful three-day event that the city has become known for, but the Bourbon Lodge within it, where, Rick, you've been, I haven't, where you can go in and have bourbon flights and hear bourbon lessons and do kind of cool stuff with Kentucky Nectar.
J.K.'s a really great guy, really well respected. He was among the first four shows of Rusty Satellite Show way back in 2013.
Oh, how cool!
Very successful. His whole family is very interesting. So I'm anxious to hear your talk with him.
That's right, and he's a new father as of a couple of days ago.
I know. I saw that on Facebook. I've had Holly on the show as well.
So listening to J.K. McKnight,
head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom. Today I'm with Matt Jones, Kevin Harned, Pat 40.
But I'm with the new Chariot,
Crispin Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
In the studio today is J.K. McKnight, founder of Forecastle Music Festival. It's hard to believe, sir, that we're talking its 15th anniversary.
I know. It's pretty incredible.
It started in Tyler Park, right? It
started in Tyler Park. Very small. I think we had more people watching from the audience who were the participants of the event than we actually did, you know, members of an audience.
And so, sitting on porches, no doubt.
Yeah. There was a couple neighbors I remember walking around. There was a small homeless contingent I remember there. And then everyone else was just people that were in the bands performing. So that's pretty funny. I remember that.
So how quickly did you outgrow that space?
We outgrew Tyler Park in 3 years. Now, we didn't technically outgrow Cherokee Park. I think we got kicked out of Cherokee Park by Metro Parks.
They
were very complimentary, by the way. They're just like, you know, this is not the venue for this. And then we were at Melwood Arts Center for a year. And then we went to the Belvedere, and we outgrew that in 3 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And now we're at Waterfront Park, and I think Waterfront Park now for 6 years, which is incredible.
So before we get into the discussion of the Bourbon Lodge, name three really good acts who are coming this year, 2017. Are you allowed to say that?
Well, Struggle Simpson.
Struggle Simpson is
amazing.
Which would kind of describe the series of television and struggling right now to actually maintain any viewers.
Right.
That's a little bit of a reach, sorry.
Right. You know, LCD Sound System hasn't been here in a long, long time. I was actually here when they were opening for Arcade Fire, but that's going to be an amazing show. Cage the Elephant, too.
Yes, absolutely.
I think they put on one of the best shows 2 years ago. And there's so many. Odessa has never been here before. Weezer. I was at Weezer's first show on their first U.S. tour here in Louisville. It was $1.
Well, I saw Arcade Fire, if I'm not mistaken, at Tooligan's eons ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So pretty amazing, you know, big lineup. We had a whole new round of artist announcements a couple weeks ago. So
that's great.
20 new artists added to it.
Well, since this is a show about eating and drinking, I'm really interested about the Bourbon Lodge. And you and I talked about this a couple of months ago at dinner, and I had no idea that it was such a big deal. Before the show, we said this is a 16,000 square foot experience.
it were.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's a festival within a festival.
It really is. It's 16,000 square foot turn of the century rickhouse meets Prohibition era speakeasy. There's nothing like it in the country. It's the largest experiential bourbon activation in the United States right now, and it keeps growing every year. We're sold out this year in terms of the brands that are inside. So it'll be full inside. We have a rarities bar we're debuting this year. We have a stage that we do panels and speakers in. We have some surprise announcements coming soon on what's going to be happening
nice.
With the stage and the programming. And then we have a whole culinary oasis, an outdoor area for people to enjoy. And you know, we sell memberships to it in advance of the festival. That comes with a commemorative mug and comes with tickets. So it is a festival within a festival. We sell thousands of memberships into the lodge before the festival even begins.
So out of the 65,000 people that came last year, how many of those went to the Bourbon Lodge, do
about
you think?
About 26,000.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it's by far, other than the water stations, it's the free water stations, it's by far the most popular activation we have. I mean, it's really the crown jewel of experiential marketing in the festival world here.
Well, let's talk about the Rarities Bar, for instance. What can people expect that are going to be one-of-a-kind drinks? We were looking at the lineup earlier and I recognized all the different brands that are on there, but what's rare that's going to be in there?
Well, so I can't announce exactly what we're going to be putting in there, but that's going to be coming soon. But you know, we have a great partnership with Liquor Barn.
Uh-huh.
They presented a lot of the programming, the mixology, the fireside chats that we do inside, and this year we're debuting the Rarities Bar and a new flight bar with them, which is really exciting. But the, you know, the products that we're going to be having there are products you can only find in the Bourbon Lodge or in Liquor Barn. And some of those products will debut in Liquor Barn before the festival, and then a lot of them will debut after the festival. But it'll definitely be the only place that you can sample and try this product anywhere in the world. There'll be lots of single barrel selections that I've made, that Brad Williams, category director of Liquor Barn, has made. Several brands have already put aside product from us. I'll give you a little bit of a hint here, but Knob Creek has put something for us that I don't think they've done for anyone, so that's pretty
very
exciting.
Cool.
Woodford Reserve will have product, and therefore Roses has put aside product. A lot of things that you can't find. You can't buy. And that's what people want. So we're really excited about that, and we'll be announcing the full Rarities lineup.
And that's partly to kind of to Kentuckyfy the experience, I guess, to say this is not only is Forecastle unique, but you have to come to the Bourbon Lodge to get these sippers.
Exactly. I mean, the whole festival is kind of built around Kentucky culture. We look at it as our role as ambassadors to kind of roll out the best assets of our city and state on a red carpet for people coming in from 49 states and 2,200 cities, 12 countries now. So, you have the Bourbon Lodge, but you also have the Kentucky Landing, which is a great area full of the best microbreweries in the state.
Oh, nice.
We have the Gonzo Bar, which is a Hunter S. Thompson bourbon bar dedicated to him, which is a beautiful art piece that we work on. We have
what makes it Gonzo? I mean,
well, if you
is
see
it like
it,
bottle and bond rough bourbon?
So a couple things make it Gonzo. So first off, the actual facade in the bar itself is an art piece. We took it from Beetlejuice, from the set of Beetlejuice.
Oh, wow.
So if you see it on site, you can't miss it. It's pretty amazing. It takes us about 4 or 5 days to construct.
Holy cow.
And then once you walk in, there's all these Hunter S. Thompson activities. There's a typewriter there. People write stories and post it all over the place.
But no firearms.
No,
we know he was fond of those.
Yeah, no firearms.
Or hallucinogenics.
That's right. There's a cool little audiovisual component to it. There's films going inside. Last year we had an artist from Chicago that came down and did caricatures, Gonzo caricatures for all the patrons. So there's that. We have the Party Cove, which is a 33-foot vessel we bring on site, and we have local DJs up on top of it, and
this
mermaids walking around. I mean, it's anything Louisville and Kentucky focused at the festival.
Mermaids.
That's
Kentucky.
nautical Kentucky.
Are they half horse, half fish? I mean, is that the theme?
When I started the festival, that was one of the hardest selling points. Was like, okay, we're a nautically themed music art activism festival, but bisecting the Midwest and South, like, you would.
yeah.
Yeah. There's many years where I just got a bunch of blank stares in conference rooms when I was meeting with some of our corporate partners and local partners too, who just didn't really understand what exactly I was trying to do.
What? Tell me about the mixology. Are these local bartenders that you guys know about and you've hired, or is it part of a traveling band, as it were?
Yes, that's a good question. So we bring in bartenders from all the bars in Louisville. We actually have a woman named Mindy who runs a company called Cherry Red Events. They're fantastic here. But she actually curates the bartender lineup. So just like the Rarities Bar is mm-hmm. a very well-crafted, curated lineup, the bartenders is actually a curated lineup as well.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, we're purposely trying to find the best bartenders and bartenders that have a pretty great bourbon IQ so that they can talk to patrons from out of town and be able to educate them.
Now, speaking of bourbon IQ, what about these fireside chats? Who will lead these things, these discussions, I guess, elevated discussions or storytelling about bourbon?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're working on that right now, but I can say, Fred Minnick,
my buddy,
is going to be coming on board with us this year. Brad Williams, who's category director of Liquor Barn, will be up there.
Uh-huh.
And then you'll have participation from all the different brands inside there, which is great. You'll have master distillers up there, bourbon historians. You'll have different engineers and people that really are working inside on product development. And
what about Fred Noe? Have you ever heard Fred Noe tell
Fred
stories?
Fred Noe's come out. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
oh, my
yeah.
gosh. He's
yeah,
hysterical.
I met Fred at the Bourbon Classic a couple years ago. Fred's fantastic. His name's come up a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of people we want to get in the Bourbon Lodge. It's always a little bit of a tough time of the year because every now and then we fall on the same weekend as Tales of the Cocktail.
Oh.
Yeah, in New Orleans. I don't know if it's this year, but other years we have. So sometimes there's some competition for that, but I don't think this year we're on the same weekend. But, as it grows, this year we're going to be doing a media party inside the Bourbon Lodge the night before. So, it gives everyone a really good excuse from the bourbon community to come out and showcase their brand in our state.
Well, we don't want to miss the Bourbon Cares program before we close out here. Tell me a little bit about that and just to let people know that there is a beneficiary of this event.
Yeah, absolutely. So Bourbon Cares was a program we launched a couple years ago that essentially combined bourbon brands with Forecastle bands. So we allowed bands to go to distilleries, pick out products, single barrel product, and then they would actually go in the Bourbon Lodge,
no
serve
kidding.
It to their fans,
no
and they would
kidding.
Go back to my foundation. Yeah, it's really amazing. We've had so many incredible artists do it over the years. And the past 2 years, we've actually, we've upped the ante a little bit more and have brought in our actual partners, our foundation partners, our beneficiary groups to come in as well and pick product out to benefit Kentucky Natural Lands Trust and the Nature Conservancy and projects we have in Central Kentucky and Eastern Kentucky right now.
That is fantastic. Well, there you go, people. There's all the reason you need to go to Forecastle this year. At the
Absolutely.
Very least, just to go drink bourbon and donate back to your state. J.K. McKnight, thanks so much for joining us on Eat, Drink, Talk.
Thanks for
having me. Hi, this is Alec Bowles, co-host of the What Happens Next podcast on Louisville.am. We talk about improv each week with We Are the Louisville Improvisers. With,
yeah, totally.
With Chris Anger and Brian Hines.
Yeah.
And Jenny.
Where's my water?
Okay. Well, right now we're just having a few treats. So we hope you can listen. Find us at Louisville.am in iTunes or using the Stitcher app on your iPhone or Android device.
All right, and a big thanks to J.K. McKnight. Very interesting interview. And that Bourbon Lodge thing, Steve, last July we had Brad Williams of the Liquor Barn on to talk about how big of a deal that was. So
he's the supplier, right?
He brings all the booze. He's the supplier and a sponsor.
The curator, as it
were. There you go. So may have to revisit him as we get on the run-up to Forecastle as it's coming up again this year.
And speaking of booze suppliers, we want to talk about our sponsor, Copper and Kings Distillery in Butchertown, creators of delicious pot-stilled American brandies right in the heart of bourbon country. Visit the distillery at 1121 East Washington Street in Butchertown. And don't miss this Friday's Blue Sky Mining launch party when the distillery will release its 7-year-old Musket Brandy. Bound to be good. always a good time down there at these launch parties. Apparently, they draw about 150 to 200 people. So
wow.
Expect cocktails, live music, great time. Starts
I want to go.
6 p.m. Just perfect happy hour. Leaving the office, almost be
yeah,
like
just get down
to the old Butchertown pub.
That's right. I remember those days.
Oh yeah,
we used to have trouble getting in that place.
Exactly,
it was so crowded.
Exactly.
All right. Well, everybody knows that Copper and King sponsors our favorite segment, and Steve and I guess have things that we sample. At least for me, I have to go to what I did on the road, and the aforementioned Woody Creek Tavern is legendary. If you talk to anybody in Aspen, they say this is one place you got to go. And
was it a dive?
You know, if you put it in the heart of Germantown, it would be a dump. You know, it really would. But it's kind of a cool place. It's got this legendary status. All the stuff on the wall. First thing I saw on the wall is a big bourbon barrel top that said said keep it weird. We love Louisville, Kentucky.
So no
kidding. There we are right there in Aspen. And you can take your picture. They pull out a Polaroid, and they'll take your picture, and you can staple it on the wall, and there's like thousands of pictures on the wall there.
It was a cool place.
It was very cool. We're talking about favorites, everybody, and leading up to that, everybody told me to go with the chicken enchiladas, which were, I guess, nothing special, nothing like you'd have at say Artisano or Guacamole or someplace like that, but in the atmosphere and all that was going on there, very good hearty food, and really enjoyed it. It was a good choice.
Well, and Denver is known for its Tex-Mex food anyway, and the Mexican
right.
community there too. It's where Chipotle started, Qdoba started. You know,
exactly.
Even though that's not authentic, but still, it has that flair. So my favorite bite of the week was the smoked corned beef steak at Harvest. I got to go to their Irish meal celebration on last Monday, and they paired it with West 6 beers. But this, believe it or not, my favorite bite was below the steak, and it was the pureed buttered turnips. Sounds like I'm voting for old folks' food, right?
Turnips.
It was awesome. And that was the thing about it. It was the simplest thing. That was just elevated from good cooking, you know. And Patrick Roney and I were talking about it afterward. And he just says, "Yeah, isn't that cool?" He said, "Our staff is really eating it up." So there you have it.
You're gonna have to put that in front of me. I'm not gonna order it.
Oh my gosh! Well, if you like mashed potatoes, you would have loved it.
Yeah,
put it that way.
Well, there you go.
So tell me about your favorite drink.
Well, I'm going to go back to Woody Creek Tavern because they said that Hunter used to sit up there at the tavern and drink margarita after margarita. So I tried one, and it was very average, but the location and the spot was great. I mean, it was like served in a beer mug, you know, sort of not a margarita glass or anything like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, atmosphere.
When in Rome kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. So I had, get this name, the Ring of Dingle Stout at Sun King Brewing. That's the only reaction I'm getting out of you is,
Ring of Dingle.
That's right. It's Sun King Brewing in Indy. And if you're a brew pub fan or a brewery fan, I should say, go visit. It was just such a cool operation. Even Roger Baylor, you know, the former owner of New Albanian Brewing Company, said, "I am a fan." That's what he said on my Facebook page.
Yeah.
But it was a great beer, great stout beer, huge operation compared to any microbrewery we have around here. And it's just spotless. I mean, like surgery or operating room, spotless. Cool place.
Well, unfortunately, you weren't able to bring our Cardinals home with a trip to the Sweet 16, Steve. Quite disappointed in you.
I was. I couldn't do much about it sitting in my suite. Thank you, Indy Tourism Bureau. That was pretty cool. They couldn't hear me hollering, couldn't hear my plays being called from that far away. Probably had a mouthful of free food.
There you go. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. Back at home, I guess before we get on our second guest, let's one more time mention our sponsors, the Eye Care Institute, your one-stop shop for eye care down there on Story Avenue, right here in Butchertown, booming Butchertown. You can make an appointment at 502-589-1500 and for anything you need with your eyes.
Absolutely. And mark your calendars for March 30th, Harvest Next 12-Person Chef's Table. This is a private event that happens in the back. In the kitchen, you get to see most of your meal assembled and meet the featured farmer for that event. So give them a call, 384-9090 at Harvest.
All right. Well, our next guest is Joel Haublieb. I was fortunate enough to record this interview back before I left on my trip, and there is one mention. I'm sorry about the datedness of it. There's one mention of St. Patrick's Day, but mostly it's about the success of the Goodwood Brewing Company and how they basically divorced themselves from BBC as a brand and created their whole new line. And I had this the newest thing down there is the Goes. You know this.
Goza.
Yeah, Goza.
Did you like it?
I loved it. It has some hemp in it. It's got all kinds of things. But Joel is an expert. I love his story about how he ended up in that business because he got fired from two jobs in the same day. So
back away from the mic for that one.
Yeah,
wow.
That's how he ended up. But there's a lot of good stories in that. And their tap room down there is one of those little understated places that if you don't know about, you should go check out. They've done a lot of remodeling in there. They're celebrating 2 years on their own, and they've got a lot of capacity for brewing. And the brand, the Goodwood brand, is now in 15 states.
That's great. Good for them. So listen in, and we'll be back next week with more Louisville restaurant and bar news on eatdrinktalk.net. See you then.
Dessert? Yes, please.
All right, today the Eat, Drink, Talk podcast is down here at the Goodwood Brewery Tap Room, and this is quite a place. Joel Hobleib is with me. You're the brewmaster.
I am, brewmaster COO.
All right, well, tell me about this this spot I've been into when it wasn't nearly this nice a couple of years ago. What all have you done here to the tap room?
Well, about 2 years ago when we rebranded, we gutted the tap room. It had the feel of like your crazy uncle's closet, and we had a lot of brewery honor from breweries hanging around that were no longer in existence, but suddenly were coming back into existence. So it didn't make as much sense for us to have beer signs from breweries that were now producing beer again on the wall. So, and we wanted to make our customers feel a little more clean and comfortable atmosphere instead of like the dirty place and around the corner.
Well, because for a long time it was sort of something a little bit of a secret, right? And now it's got a little more prominence, and you got a lot of building going on in the neighborhood, right?
Yeah, tons. Nulu has had a big impact on the property values, and we've got a huge condo complex across the street, and the other corner is going to be apartment complex, and I'm just waiting for the ball to drop on the transmission shop on the other corner.
Yeah, you're not getting many customers from there, I'm sure, but you have a lot of events here. This is St. Patrick's Day week, and I see you got Danny Flanagan coming in.
Yep. We've Alana Fugit is our bartender, and she's helped really, besides being an awesome musician herself, she's helped draw in some of the best musicians in Louisville, and we installed a really nice house sound system here so the musicians don't have to drag their own PA system and microphones in. Yeah. They can just come in and plug in and go. So it makes it easier for them, and we can they drag a crowd in, and we keep them happy. It's a great relationship. And it's still a small venue that you can really enjoy it and be close and intimate.
Sure. And you don't have a kitchen, right? But a lot of times you have food trucks.
Right. Anytime we have a big event or a private event that there's going to be a lot of people, we'll get a food truck down here.
Okay. Well, Joel, you've been kind enough to give me a sample of the newest Goza, your newest product down here, and it's special. It's tart. That's the kind of beer I really like. Tell me a little bit about how you came up with the idea and what all is in this thing.
Well, I looked at our entire portfolio, and I looked for holes in it. What flavor profile are we missing? You know, we've got a lot of malty beers because those are generally age well in barrels. We've got two hoppy beers now. I just launched the Spruce Tip IPA, and we've had the Goodwood Pale Ale for quite a while. So we've got, you know, some hoppy beers. And then the Louisville Lager we created, 2 years ago. It's a wonderful, nice light lager for the other 80% of beer drinkers.
That's right.
And what we were missing really, the easiest target was some type of sour or tart beer. And the sours are really kind of difficult to make for a brewery that brews, mostly clean beers. There's a lot of risk of cross-contamination. So I decided on a tart instead, which is, they call it a kettle sour versus souring the beer post-fermentation or during fermentation. I sour it in the kettle before fermentation and then boil it to kill off the bacteria.
Okay, well, this also, you told me it has some hemp in it.
It does. We've got some hemp extract in it. It's the terpenes of hemp. I've tasted a lot of hemp beers before, and most of them use toasted hemp seed, and it gives kind of a nutty flavor. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's what most people think of when they see hemp on a label as far as flavor profile.
Yeah.
So I've worked with an extract producer that processes raw hemp into CBD oil and found that they were discarding terpenes, and they isolated the terpenes for me and gave me a concentrated extract, and we started working with that and found we just really wanted to add a level of complexity. We didn't really want it to dominate because the GOES flavor already really has a lot going on in it, and I think it worked out really well for us. It's just really a hint of the kind of dankiness that hemp and some other herbs have.
Well, certainly it's a unique and strong taste. I wanted to ask you about, Goodwood in general. You started the brand a couple of years ago, and uniquely, Goodwood is not just a cool name because it rhymes. It really has to do with the beer. And tell me how the philosophy of bringing wood to beer.
Well, we being in Kentucky, we've always really been happy and proud to use bourbon barrels in our beer, and it's easy access for us. You know, we can go pick them up at the distillery, so that's a huge advantage over, you know, most of the breweries in the U.S. have to get them shipped. Mm-hmm. And we get them very fresh that way. I can go up to the cooperage or the distillery and ask them what they've dumped today, and they'll load them right on our truck, and they're still sopping wet. So it's always been an advantage for us to get fresh barrels that contribute really good flavors. So we started expanding on it when we were a bluegrass brewing company, and when we rebranded, we really ran with the opportunity to work with wood more. You look back in history, and wood was used constantly in beverage, on sailing ships and for storage years ago. So we decided that we could experiment and try and pull different flavors out of different barrels. You know, we got wine barrels, brandy barrels, bourbon barrels.
And really, all is it 100%? 100% of your beers have some touch with wood?
Yep. The 4-packs have all aged in a barrel. The 6-packs have all aged with a wood component of some kind. We've got poplar and ash that are more nods to the state and the region than actual contributing a lot of flavor to it. But we've put walnuts in the walnut brown to give it a level of complexity. And, you know, we've got spruce tips in the IPA. You know, that throws some interesting kind of Christmassy flavors on the finish of the IPA.
Well, I tell you, there are a lot of flavors to be tested here. But you know, we're in the middle of St. Patrick's Week, and I guess this is the place to come to get green beer.
Absolutely, we'll have we've got a half barrel of green beer, and we made a bunch of beer for Drake's, so all the Drake's will have some green lager on.
Okay.
And I think there'll be some more around town, I'm sure.
So last week you had this big event where you had the blessing of the keg, which is sounds a little odd, but there's a lot of tradition in that.
Yeah, the Hibernians and Father Fowler have been coming down for 12 years now, and we do a big blessing, sing some Irish songs, and rejoice in the birthday of our bourbon barrel stout, and we grab a symbolic keg and roll it down to O'Shea's and tap it, and everybody has a good time.
Oh, there you go. Well, again, you know, St. Patrick's Week, a lot of beer drinking going on in this city, and I know you got a big party coming up right here at the tap room.
Yep.
On is that Friday and Saturday or both?
For the Flanagan, Danny Flanagan play.
For the St. Patrick's
Day. Oh, the St. Patrick's Day. Well, we've got the celebration actually starts Thursday here at 4:30. But yeah, we'll have we may be in the parade this year again. I think we have a trailer and a truck, and we always throw some barrels on it and have a good time.
Okay, well, let me ask one more question about Goodwood, the brand, because you know, we're talking about the tap room and the, and all the beers you're experimenting with here, but you've really expanded your distribution.
A great deal, more than 50% in the last 10 months. We're in 11 states now, and the whole sales, marketing, and some of the executive staff are down in South Carolina right now launching.
Wow. Well, that's impressive, and I know because there's a lot more breweries. You hear about a new one opening almost every day. I mean, is it more difficult to get distributed around places when there's all this competition?
Great question. It's getting very difficult, and you know, the marketplace is so crowded now with brands that distributors are being very selective. You know, 1999, 2000, if you could produce a beer in a package, people would buy it.
Yeah.
No matter what, just throw it at us. Now, you know, you're pitching a distributor. They're looking at whether your product's going to match their portfolio, or how, and we're looking at them too, going, how many products do you have in your portfolio? Mm-hmm. How much face time are we actually going to get when your people are on the ground making a sales call? So there's a lot more vetting going on of the distributors and the production.
So you got to have a good quality and a good marketing pitch.
Yes,
I suppose.
Yep.
But
quality's becoming a huge selling point. Consistency and quality. Where, you know, the smaller breweries, and I've learned the hard way, even here as we've grown, you know, it's tough to put out a product that has good shelf stability as a small brewer. You have to spend more money on quality control and equipment to, you know, make the your beer have greater longevity on the shelf.
Yeah. Well, it's great. I wanted to ask you one last thing before we get, let you go about how you got started in this business, because you like had a real job.
I was actually an IT guy, and I bought and sold homebrew supplies for two large format liquor stores at night, and my day job was working in the network maintenance at and communications company. And
wow, that sounds boring.
yeah, really.
Compared to brewing beer.
I got laid off both jobs, and I was kind of happy about it. I was no longer the IT guy in the basement. Actually got to see daylight.
Well, that's good. Well, it certainly led to a great career here with Goodwood. And, you know, I just want to thank you for being on the show and for this great year.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.